Most private employers surveyed by the federal government this year did not pay the health insurance premiums of their furloughed workers. We're talking about the challenges of paying for health care coverage here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. According to new data from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, only about 2 in 5 businesses that furloughed workers paid part or all of the employees' health insurance premiums. Have your health insurance costs gone up? What are you doing to manage? What questions or advice are you looking for when it comes to health savings accounts? Did you enroll in coverage through the Affordable Care Act for the first time? How did it go? It's 800-642-1234. Ann Carnes writes about money and personal finance for the New York Times. Her columns can be found under Your Money Advisor. Ann, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So over 10 million people in our country are unemployed. Losing your job can mean losing that employer-provided health insurance. What steps should a person take if they're in this position?
Well, it's certainly a concerning time for many people who have lost jobs and with it their employer-provided health coverage. The first step that someone who loses their employer-based insurance might want to do is, number one, if they are married, they could potentially be covered by their spouse's employer coverage if their spouse has coverage. If that's not an option, the second step would be to consider something called COBRA, which is a federal law that allows people to continue their employer-based coverage but pay the entire premium, which for many people is unaffordable.
Very expensive, yeah.
Right. It means that you're paying the premium that you normally paid from your payroll deductions plus the portion that your employer paid, which is typically the majority of the premium. So for some people, that's not a great option, although it is there. And then, of course, you could also shop on the federal healthcare.gov marketplace, which was created to provide individual insurance for people who don't have insurance through an employer. And currently, it's open enrollment on healthcare.gov and the state exchanges, where about 14 states have their own healthcare marketplaces where people can buy coverage.
Yeah. Going back to your first suggestion of check to see if you can get on your spouse's plan, could you, if that is possible, could you get on the your partner's plan right away? Would it be considered a life event if you lose your job?
I believe it would be if you lost a job. That might vary by employer, but that's definitely something that you should check out.
If you're not married, and this is your partner, but in a aren't officially married, is that a concern? How does that work?
That I believe you wouldn't automatically be able to go on your partner's plan, but that might vary by employer as well.
Okay, We're talking with Ann Carnes, writes about money and personal finance for the New York Times. A number of her columns have focused on healthcare costs. Open enrollment on the federal marketplace ends Tuesday. What questions do you have about your health insurance coverage and the costs that you're incurring now amid COVID? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. And the Affordable Care Act, the Marketplace Exchange, has a no wrong door policy. Can you explain what that means, how it works?
Yes. The federal marketplace was designed to hopefully put people where they would get coverage regardless of where they would qualify. So if you go to healthcare.gov, for example, and if your own state has its own marketplace exchange, it would direct you there. And ideally, if you were perhaps eligible for low-cost coverage, say if your income was very low under your state's Medicaid program, it would also funnel you there as well.
And it's called Badger Care in our state for targeting low-income residents. Yeah, go ahead.
Right. So ideally, the first place you should start if you're looking is to go to healthcare.gov, because that will help you get to the right place wherever that ends up being. That's what that open door policy, or no wrong door policy, excuse me, was designed to do. And so right now, people are signing up for coverage that would begin in 2021. And for individual plans, that's where to go. If you do qualify for BadgerCare or another state Medicaid program, that does not have an open enrollment period. That depends on your income and your personal situation. So you don't have to rush to do that, but it's there as an option for you.
And we also have in our state some free insurance help from the State Office of the Commissioner of Insurance. It's at wiscovered.com, wiscovered, which also helps kind of funnel you into the right place, whether it's going to healthcare.gov, the marketplace, whether it's going to BadgerCare. I mean, part of this, I would think, Anne, is trying to get in the right lane, knowing exactly where you fit in our country's healthcare system.
The healthcare system can be, you know, confusing and overwhelming in the best of times. So, you know, in the middle of a pandemic and the, you know, associated economic problems that many people are having, it can be a challenge for sure.
So with subsidies, most people do qualify for healthcare subsidies when they're on the exchange. Where can you find out what support is available to you through subsidies?
Well, there's a couple of things you can do. I mean, on healthcare.gov, there's something called window shopping, where you can enter your financial information and see what your potential coverage might be, what your premium subsidy might be, which is based on income. So that's, you know, sort of the first step to take, and then it will, you know, kind of walk you through formally applying for the plan. If you want, there's also other locations online where there's sort of subsidy calculators. The Kaiser Family Foundation, for example, I believe they're at kff.org,
yeah,
has a subsidy, you know, estimator that you could use, a plan estimator, to kind of get a ballpark figure before you go through the formal application process.
What are the risks, Anne, of saying, you know what, I'm going to just take a gap in insurance. I know my job will be back, or I will be back in just maybe a few months. What are those risks?
Well, you know, many people do end up going without insurance, either because they can't afford it or they're not aware of the options that are out there. But, you know, for example, we're in the middle of a pandemic, and you could get sick, and there's no guarantee that, you know, your care would be covered as an uninsured person. If you end up in the hospital, you could end up, you know, owing thousands of dollars for medical care.
So it is taking quite a risk there if something does go wrong with your health.
Yes. I mean, there's always a risk. Now, if you're, you know, young and healthy, you might consider that a risk worth taking, but there's always a risk that you could end up sick or injured and need care and be on the hook for the bill.
Anne Carnes writes about personal finance topics for the New York Times. We're exploring how to manage the cost of healthcare premiums and set aside medical expenses for budgeting. Did you lose your employer-sponsored health insurance this year? What questions do you have about navigating the healthcare marketplace? Are you juggling medical bills now or contesting a bill? How is that going? Join in with your questions, your situation, 800-642-1234. There's a line for you. Back in a minute with Anne Carnes here on the Ideas Network. Employer premiums and deductibles have risen much faster than wages over the past decade. According to recent data from the Kaiser Family Foundation, annual premiums for employer-sponsored family health coverage topped $21,000 this year. Workers, on average, paid about $5,600 toward the cost of their coverage. We're talking about healthcare coverage costs here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Is your premium and deductibles going up? What costs have you incurred for a recent procedure or a COVID treatment? Can you keep up with your medical bills if you've lost income? Join in any point, 800-642-1234. We have Ann Carnes this hour, writes about money and personal finance for the New York Times. She's our guide. So, Anne, we're nearing the end of open enrollment of the health insurance annual open enrollment period, ends Tuesday. What should people take into account who already have a plan? What should they do during this time?
Well, generally, health advocates and analysts that I speak to recommend that even if you are already enrolled, that you should actively shop for plans to see if perhaps there might be one that's less expensive for you, or you know, have better coverage. Perhaps your income changed this year, and so you might qualify for subsidies. Next year, you should always kind of check to see what's available, rather than just automatically renewing, to make sure you're getting the best deal for you or your family.
So shop around in much the same way you might shop around for car insurance or shop around for home insurance. I would imagine, though, you have to pay quite a bit of attention to the finer details on what exactly is covered.
Yes. I mean, you always, and if we're talking about, again, open enrollment through healthcare.gov, the Obamacare exchanges, you know, you want to just go again and enter your information and see what you're eligible for. And while the open enrollment period for the main Obamacare exchange ends December 15th for coverage starting in January, I know you're in Wisconsin, I believe, they're on the main healthcare.gov marketplace, and other states might have their own exchanges and the deadlines might be different. So it's important to check there.
So if your financial situation has changed this year and you expect it to change again in 2021, what could that mean for your health insurance costs?
Well, if you're, you know, again, covered through the marketplace, when you sign up for the coverage for the coming year, you're estimating what your income is going to be next year. So if you have, you know, lost a job or have been working fewer hours and you're expecting that to last, if you didn't qualify for financial help this year, you might qualify next year, and that can significantly lower your premiums and also your out-of-pocket costs generally when you're buying a plan through healthcare.gov.
We're talking with Ann Carnes, writes the Your Money Advisor column for the New York Times. We're looking at managing health insurance costs, where to find support, especially now amid the pandemic, taking your situation, your questions. Did you lose your employer-sponsored health insurance this year? What questions do you have about managing the healthcare marketplace, about navigating your healthcare, at 800-642-1234? Judy is with us from Juneau. Hi, Judy.
Hi. Yeah, I have a relative that quit his job to take a new one, and in the meantime, he doesn't have health insurance. He also developed COVID and has been in the hospital a week now.
Oh, no.
And it's not looking good. He'd have to have someone have health care power of attorney, but can he still pick up COVID? COBRA to cover his health insurance from his old job.
Okay, so he's between jobs and health insurance stopped at the old job, and now wondering about COBRA in this situation. Ann, what would you say?
I'm not honestly 100% certain. It might depend how long it's been since he left his previous job. But it's certainly worth checking with his former employer on that to see if it might still be available. It's definitely worth checking.
Yeah, absolutely. Because there can be, you have an opening for, I believe, almost a couple months or so where you don't have to decide on COBRA right away. And so that also might give some wiggle room there for his situation, Judy.
Hear that. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Judy. So, Anne, what is the subsidy cliff? You've been writing about the subsidy cliff. What is it?
Okay, when people buy coverage or they shop for coverage on the marketplace, the availability of subsidies to help people pay their premiums is dependent on income as it relates to the federal poverty level, which is a number the government sets for determining various federal benefits. So for the healthcare.gov plans, people are able to get subsidy assistance if they make up to four times the federal poverty level. So for next year, for example, an individual could have income up to, I believe, almost $51,000 and qualify. But once they go over that level, the help is not available. It's quite abrupt. It doesn't phase out with income as it goes over that level. It's pretty much, that's why they call it a cliff. It's abrupt. It just stops. So for some people who are kind of near or around the level, it can be difficult for them to afford the premium that's available for them.
Is that subsidy cliff, is that, what about if you have kids or dependents?
The level depends on the number of people in the family. So, for example, a family of four, I think the cutoff is just under $105,000. So you can make up to that amount and qualify for subsidy, but over that, generally not. Now, it's also important to note that it can vary by state. Some states, California, for example, covers up to six times the federal poverty level as being eligible for subsidies.
So some states have found some solutions to this hard and fast number, if you will. But if you literally go over that $51,000, there isn't any help for you. Is that what I'm hearing?
There's no financial. The financial help offered through the Affordable Care Act plans is given through the form of a premium tax credit. It's a tax credit that lowers your monthly premium. So, right, that is not available if you are over that level. Some states have plans that can fill in the gap, but again, it varies by state.
Yeah. So there are a variety of health insurance plans available through the exchange. What does a bronze level plan offer?
Okay, generally the plans are offered, as you mentioned, through metal levels from bronze up to platinum. And the difference is the bronze level plans would have lower monthly premiums, but the trade-off is they typically have higher deductibles and out-of-pocket costs. So they're typically attractive to people who might be generally healthy and not have a lot of ongoing healthcare needs because you're paying less every month in a premium, but you would generally pay more if you became ill or needed care. But all the plans cover the essential benefits, and they all, cannot disqualify you from coverage for having a pre-existing condition. But as you go up the metal scale up to, gold and platinum, those plans have generally higher monthly premiums but lower deductibles. So you would be paying more on an ongoing basis, but, you'd be paying less out of pocket when you do need care.
Yeah. And I'm wondering, too, are those bronze level plans, where those high deductible plans, are they often paired with a health savings account?
They can be, yes. So health savings accounts are kind of an important, an important tool that people can use to help cover some of those costs. They typically go well, not typically, they are paired with a high deductible plan. There has to be a specific level of deductible for a plan to qualify for a health savings account. But generally, you can put money in the account, get a tax benefit for the money that you put in there, and then use that money to pay for care when you need it. Most health savings plans also have an investment option. So if you don't need the money, you can invest it and grow it for the future. Unlike other types of health accounts, for example, some employers offer a flexible spending account. The health savings account is portable. So if you have it through an employer and you change employers, you can take the money.
You can take the money with you. Yeah, yeah. Portability. Ann Karns writes about personal finance for the New York Times. She's fielding your health care coverage questions. Do you struggle with unpaid medical debt? How are you managing keeping up with payments? Did you recently lose coverage? What questions do you have about getting a new health plan? 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up after a news update on the Ideas Network. The economic downturn caused by the pandemic has turned our attention toward how to pay medical expenses and get adequate coverage. Over the past decade, the Affordable Care Act sought to address gaps in our health system. Open enrollment in the marketplace is underway. Deadline is Tuesday, as we've been talking about, for coverage to begin in January. What is the status of your health coverage? Are you paying hospital bills for COVID treatment now? If you recently lost coverage, can you afford a new premium? It's 800-642-1234. Ann Karns writes about money and personal finance for the New York Times. Her columns can be found under Your Money Advisor, and she's our guide this hour. And we are talking there about the distinctions between health savings accounts, HSAs, and flexible spending accounts, FSAs. What medical expenses can you use your accounts, whether HSAs or FSAs, what can they be used for?
Hi. So generally, they can be used for pretty much anything that your regular health insurance doesn't cover. You could use them. You can use it to buy prescription copays, the money that you have to pay toward your deductible, you can generally draw on them to pay for that. If you can search online to see specifically what is covered and what isn't. Mm-hmm. But generally things that are covered, that aren't covered by insurance can be paid for using your health savings account. And there's been changes recently. For a time, you couldn't use the health savings account funds to purchase, for example, over-the-counter medicine that didn't need a prescription, unless, sort of confusingly, you received a prescription for it from your doctor. But that's changed, and you can now use the health savings funds to buy over-the-counter medication.
How do you actually get at the money in these accounts, like actually use the money in these accounts?
Most of them would come with a debit card,
okay,
a dedicated debit card that you could use to buy the items.
Okay. Is there any type of proof that you have to offer, maybe like outside of a receipt or something like that?
Well, typically, if you're using the debit card, mm-hmm, it would... you would have a record of it. Typically, if you have a health savings account through, say, an employer plan, there's usually some kind of online record-keeping system. But if not, if you're just doing it on your own, then you should save receipts potentially if you ever need them for tax purposes.
Okay, so step back here for a moment and take stock of this year in health coverage, if you would. With this public health crisis, this recession, what has that meant for overall health care costs hitting families?
Generally, this year, the health trend has been for a, I believe, single-digit increases as opposed to in the past when we've had double-digit increases in healthcare costs. You know, how individual families are affected, of course, varies greatly by their own situation. If they're able to remain employed, if their health has, you know, been good, it would vary.
Sure. So in terms of the increases you've seen with premiums, with deductibles, are people's wages keeping up with those increases?
I think generally over time, in particular, deductibles have risen. People are probably, you know, many people are struggling to afford the healthcare that they have or that they need. It remains to be seen sort of what happens with cost trends for next year. This year, although we were in the middle of a pandemic, some people postponed or delayed kind of more routine care. So they may actually not have been spending as much as they might have, but it sort of remains to be seen what happens with that trend.
Yeah, so even like a preventative care checkup that would be maybe covered 100% in the plan, except for perhaps a copay, you know, those types of visits to the doctor were put off. And so people not, using their plans fully.
That's true. And that is why it sort of is unclear what will happen with costs generally for next year.
All right, let's bring in another question here. Steve is joining us from Michigan this morning. Hi, Steve. What is your question?
Hi. I'm listening to your radio show, and my question is about the healthcare benefits and the relationship, the PPO, HMO, as far as orthodontics. And I'm told that my wife needs some orthodontic work, but it's like, they stop paying for it after a certain age, and I don't understand that, but I'm still paying for it.
Steve, thank you for that question. What about dental care and orthodontic costs here, Ann?
Orthodontic costs, as I well know, because my children have.
Oh dear.
It can be quite expensive and typically is not covered by most health plans, although. Again, if you have employer coverage, that might vary. There might be some portion of it might be paid. Going back to health savings accounts, that might be a good one to consider saving for in a health savings account. You could use that to cover orthodontics, I guess regardless of what age you are.
Yeah, but, you know, with a health insurance plan, especially when you're shopping on the marketplace, what is the role of dental insurance? Is that separate from health insurance plans?
Some plans might include some dental coverage. If they're more of an HMO type plan, they may include some coverage. Otherwise, you may have to purchase a separate dental plan with a separate premium.
Yeah, you might have to layer in that dental coverage. And even if you want a tiny, small fraction of those braces covered, you might even have to boost up your dental plan that you have that is available through your employer.
Right.
Yeah.
Dental is kind of a separate issue, as, you know, as also vision coverage is often an additional premium. It can be depending on the plan.
Yeah, vision and dental, those can be the true outliers, Steve. Does that make sense?
Yes, it unfortunately it does. I was just listening to your show, and I was like, well, I'm wondering about that question because I'm still paying for it, but they cut it off at like age 19 or something. But I'm paying for it as an adult. I still need it. It's not like... So
yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, look, I got braces as an adult when I was in my 20s, and it really depends on each individual health insurance plan and boy, if you can find any coverage on orthodontics, that is pretty remarkable. Steve, thank you for the call. And, you know, open enrollment ending on December 15th, that's Tuesday. What other circumstances should people, you know, to sign up for healthcare on the exchange, what other circumstances should they be thinking about?
Well, I guess generally, you know, the advice at this time of year is not to wait until the last day to sort of be shopping if you need coverage, just because, you know, technology can fail at times, or that just might be a lot of, you know, people trying to get questions answered. So if you do think you might need coverage, you should probably start thinking about that before next Tuesday. You know, and generally, again, you should go on to see what you might be qualified for, whether you do qualify for financial help. Don't assume that you don't qualify is the advice I've been told. Many people who do shop on the exchanges can get financial assistance.
Yeah, don't make assumptions. How have court challenges to the Affordable Care Act affected the law's reach?
Well, for this year's open enrollment, there's no actual impact on what's available or who qualifies. Some health advocates have been concerned that because of the challenges to the act, that people may have a perception that the coverage is not there or that it will somehow go away. The Supreme Court did hear arguments last month on a challenge to the Affordable Care Act, but there won't be a ruling typically from the court until the spring, next spring. So if you think that you need coverage for next year, you should go ahead and shop for it and at least have, you know, if the worst case scenario were to occur and the subsidies were to be struck down, for example, you could just cancel coverage. You wouldn't have to keep paying for a coverage you couldn't afford. So you might as well, as it's been explained to me, you might as well have coverage while you can. The general read from the challenge last month was that it's not expected to be struck down, but we won't know. We just don't know now until the court rules.
We're discussing healthcare coverage. We're discussing navigating the system to gain adequate coverage. Ann Carnes writes the Your Money Advisor column for the New York Times. Has your financial situation changed in these times? And is it more difficult to cover the cost of health insurance? Are you ineligible for tax breaks or subsidies, but find the cost of a premium out of reach for your budget? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Ann Carnes here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Ann Carnes, a personal finance columnist for the New York Times. We're looking at healthcare coverage and the Affordable Care Act marketplace. Let's bring in Kathleen now from WAPACA. Hi, Kathleen. What is your question?
Yes, hi. I'm not sure if I missed it. The guest indicated that the maximum amount per year to earn was around $51,000. Is there a minimal amount of income that a person has to have in order to qualify for a plan?
And is there a minimum threshold?
Well, the law covers, I believe it's from at poverty level up to the 400% of poverty level. If you make, it sort of depends on what state you're in. If this lower level comes into play. For example, if your state, one of the ways that the Affordable Care Act increased coverage was to allow states to expand their Medicaid programs. And so it depends on the specifics of your state's Medicaid program.
Mm-hmm.
If you, you know, some states cover 100% of poverty level for Medicaid or below. They set their own guidelines there.
Yeah, so Badger Care here in Wisconsin for a household of one would be a maximum annual income of $38,280 in order to qualify. And, of course, it's gauged upon, you know, as you go up there in the number of people in your household, it goes up from there for the maximum income for a household.
Okay. Last year I tried to qualify for the Badger Care, or not the Badger Care, Affordable Care Act, but I wasn't working at the time, and the Affordable Care, the .gov lady told me I had to make a minimal, maybe it was because it was Wisconsin, of $12,490. If I couldn't guarantee that I was going to make that in 2020, then I had to apply for the Badger Care.
Okay, okay.
Would that sound correct?
I believe, I mean, I'm not an expert in the specifics of how they qualify people, but that sounds right to me.
Yeah, Kathleen, thank you for that question. Carrie now in West Bend with a question. Hi, Carrie.
Good morning. I'm not sure if the guest can answer this question. I had applied through the marketplace last year, my husband and I, and we had coverage starting January 1st, and then he went full-time for his job, so we had to end that coverage, and we got full coverage through his work. Now he is going to be semi-retiring starting March 1st, and I applied again through the marketplace. But it said that I have until March 16th to get my information in, and I thought, well, maybe I would have to reapply for a special or life change. Do you know anything? Is there a gap if I wait? I don't want to apply for January 1st because then my coverage, I'm getting double coverage.
Double, right, yeah.
So I'm not sure if... Go ahead.
Could you just explain that again? I want to make sure I understand what exactly you're worried about.
Yes. My husband's full-time employment will end February 28th. And so I went on the marketplace just to apply to see what we qualify for, thinking I would have to actually apply in January or February as a life event change, a life change for our coverage to begin on March 1st. But now it says that I have until March 16th to select the plan to begin. So I don't want double coverage because I know you can get penalized for that.
And Anne, we're short on time here. So anything that you can offer there?
I would be careful about, you know, waiting if you need the coverage. But if it's, you know, the deadline may in fact be correct. I'm not sure. I'm sorry.
Yeah. It probably varies in each particular situation. Anne, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
Anne Carnes writes about money and personal finance for the New York Times, and you can find her columns under Your Money Advisor. And now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about musicians playing through the pandemic.
The pandemic has presented unique challenges and changes for band ensembles. University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee musicians have been adjusting their safety precautions so they can rehearse together in person this semester. Jessica Gatzo brings us their story.
On the stage of UWM's Bader Concert Hall, clear rain ponchos hide clarinets, white cloths cover trumpet bells, and special masks go over the mouthpieces of flutes. No one speaks as the conductor begins the first 30-minute session of precious rehearsal time. While most classes are online at UWM, performing arts classes like band must adapt to create a safe in-person learning environment. Since aerosol spray spreads through the bell and even keys of wind instruments, companies have designed coverings to contain most of the spray.
That, along with the spatial social distancing and proper ventilation in the room, is about the best we can do right now.
That's Dr. John Clymer, director of bands at UWM. Although the instrument covers make in-person ensemble rehearsal relatively safe, Clymer says it isn't always easy adjusting to them.
We've found that the covers cause the instruments sometimes to go flat, so there's some pitch issues to deal with.
The brass, we have it a little bit easier. We just get fabric covers that kind of go around the bells of our instruments.
Anna Wisniewski is a junior at UWM, majoring in instrumental music education. She plays French horn in the symphony band.
I do feel like the sound is a little bit more muffled, and that's just because the sound is coming out of a bell. You put something over the bell, there's going to be more resistance.
To reduce aerosols from spreading, musicians aren't allowed to talk between songs. Clymer says they now face forward instead of in a traditional crescent shape.
Certainly when you're spacing folks out at least 6 feet apart, sometimes more, there's the challenge in trying to keep things, the precision and the rhythm together. If you're doing chamber music like we do with the wind ensemble, it's so important for the musicians to be able to see each other.
Plus, in-person rehearsals are shorter now. Students can choose to take their one-on-one lessons over Zoom or in a studio with a clear curtain dividing the room.
You know, sometimes you'll be on a part and you'll show up to rehearsal and you'll be one of two people there because the other three on your part are quarantined. And so they're really asking us to be flexible and be able to adapt. In the blink of an eye, you kind of have to be ready to change. And I think that's the hardest part.
Some composers are evolving too and writing arrangements to incorporate fewer musicians on stage. Every music class, not just the ensembles, looks different now. Clymer teaches his conducting class in a hybrid format, and Wisniewski is learning how to teach musical concepts for secondary education using online platforms.
A lot of the education majors, we all have a fear. Are we going to be fit educators for a real 21st century in-person classroom experience? I mean, what if we don't have the same experience and the same strategies that in-person, original, you know, in-person teachers have? And I hope that future employers keep an open mind to that because nobody asked to learn how to be a teacher online.
Wisniewski hopes to be a middle or high school band director when she graduates in 2022. She hopes COVID will be less of a threat by then.
Jessica Gatzo brought us that story on UWM band ensembles adjusting to playing music in the pandemic. She's a junior at UWM. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Want to make sure you catch every Wisconsin Life story? Subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org. I'm Maureen McCollum.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.